Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. We are continuing to read The Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read, Adar turned towards the other but threw himself to the ground when he saw the turncoat had a blaster aimed his direction. The turncoat fired as Adar fell. The blast came close enough to hitting him that he could feel the heat of it passing just over his back. He hit the cobblestones of the road with a jarring sensation. Pain shot up through his elbow as it met a jagged edge of a cobblestone that jutted up from the street. It was enough out of the way of the normal traffic that it had not been worn down with use or noticed by one of the city's engineers. Biting off a yelp of pain, Adar rolled to his knees and brought up his blaster, firing off a shot. The turncoat had already anticipated what Adar would do and had disappeared behind the fence. Adar aimed at the approximate location where the Hanwe had gone and fired several shots through the treated wood. He nodded his head when he heard another whoomph as the blast made contact with his target. He stood, already mid-stride in the direction of the large home, when he noticed three more Hanwe turncoats had followed out from behind the first two. They all had blasters pointed his direction. And now, Chapter 4. Sore cried out when the doorway of the arch reappeared, cutting her off from her father, Bark. The door had opened out into an alley in Zekirani. Now it was just a wall of brick. Even though the Hanwe had been rushing towards the door moments before, she tried to push towards the arch. She intended to learn if swiping her thumb across the top would open the door for her. She couldn't just leave her father behind without trying something. Karn got to her first and held her back. "What are you doing?" Karn was usually a quiet and even-tempered man, but his voice was strained and had an edge to it. His tone gave her pause. "Have you lost all sense, or just gone suicidal?" His voice rose as he spoke, and while it barely approached above a loud conversation for somebody else, for him, it was as good as yelling. "My father's out there still," Soray said. "We have to get him." Even as the words left her mouth, she realized the futility of what she was saying. The Hanwe would be on the other side of the doorway now, trying to figure out how to get to them. There had not been much space in the rock where the door had been located on the Zekirani side, so she supposed that they were miles away by now, if not on the other side of the earth. Or in the middle of it, she thought. She shivered, goose flesh running up and down her arms as a cold sweat broke out all over her body. "The man that stabbed Jorad in the back, that was your father?" The disdain in Karn's voice was evident, and she arched her neck, intending to stand up for her father. Bark had been in a difficult position. It killed her that despite Jorad's actions, she had had no other choice but to stick close to him because of the Hanwe. She had tried to get her father to see reason, but had not been able to prevail. Karn stared down at her, and she became afraid that he would hurt her. His stoic face was pulled back in a small frown, and his eyes had narrowed slightly. He held her gaze, his jaw working. "Your precious Jorad just killed two boys I grew up with," she thought, but could not force herself to say. "Karn," Zarda said while Sore tried to get her voice to work. "I need help." "Sore is grieving the loss of her father. She knows opening that door will mean death for us all." Zarda looked right at her. "I won't hesitate to kill you if you try again." She spoke calmly, as if talking about potting a plant or going for a walk. Sore shivered again and looked down at her feet. "Bloody Melia," she thought. "Zarda is right." She swallowed, her face turning red. She was certain that Zarda would not hesitate to back up the threat. Soray admired much about Zarda, but part of her wanted to throttle the woman. It was all the worse because Zarda was right, both in her assessment of Soray and the need to make a threat. "Karn, I need bandages," Zarda snapped. "He's lost a lot of blood. Quick, go!" Soray looked up as Karn's eyes narrowed further before he pushed her away from the arch, releasing her from his grip. She opened her mouth, screwing up her nerve to defend Bark, but Karn had already disappeared down the hallway. She put her back against the wall and sunk to the floor, trying to dig her fingernails into the floor, but the smooth black tile slid out from under her grasp. A mournful sound escaped her mouth that made the nearby Zekerani refugees stare at her. But she did not care what they thought. Quivering, she tried to hold it back, but it came out with a burst. As she broke into quiet sobbing, hating herself for the display of emotion, but unable to do anything but let it out. Her brief, bittersweet reunion with her father had left her in a worse state than when she'd thought him dead. She had hardly been able to believe it when she'd seen her father on the street and had been overjoyed to discover that it had not been her imagination. It really had been him. That feeling had been shattered by sorrow and tears when she had learned of the loss of her mother. Jorad had killed Garu and Thon. Right after that, everything had quickly gone to the lowest level of the ninth hell. Melia, she thought, I can't stay with Jorad any longer, but I can't afford to leave him either. When she thought of kissing him, she felt like she was going to empty the contents of her stomach. Bark had been right behind her when she had left the baker's shop, and it had seemed as though the tension between Jorad and him had dissipated. Somehow, things had gotten out of hand again. What had happened? She shook her head, biting back a growl. She wasn't very successful. How had things gone so wrong? Finding her father should have been a joyful reunion, but instead, she couldn't stop sobbing. This was all Arrow's fault. It had all happened because he was a jealous and a bitter fool. She sighed. That didn't take any blame away from Jorad or her father, though. The thought gave her pause. It was the men in her life that were the problem. She had been letting them have far too much control over her. Am I such a weakling that each of them feels they have to try to force their decisions on me? She cringed as she looked over at Zarda, who was more focused on Jorad, and did not appear to have noticed her most recent outbursts. Zarda represented the exact opposite of who Soray was. While Soray doubted she could use the dagger that Jorad had given her, she had seen Zarda practice with her sword. Zarda was as good as any of the men. She didn't balk or cower at the sight of danger. She met it head on. Zarda would not hesitate to kill me if need be, she thought ruefully. He lost consciousness, Zarda yelled. Quick, I need my bag. The words broke into Soray's thoughts as she twisted around and took in Jorad, who was covered in blood. So much blood. At least none of it had come from her father. She supposed that she should be thankful for that. Jorad had shown restraint when it had come to Bark. She wondered what would have happened if she had not cried out. A knot formed in the middle of her stomach. Jorad might have killed her father if she had not. Zarda was hunched over Jorad. She pulled out a dagger and cut away Jorad's bloody shirt. Some of the blood had come from Jorad, but Soray knew much of it had come from Thon. Soray had been fond of the tall, thick man. He had looked as though he could rip a man in half, but on more than one occasion she had witnessed him perform a surprising act of kindness. Little Jamie's kitten had crawled up a tree, and the poor boy had been in tears when Soray had found him. She had been surprised when Thon had approached and, without speaking a word, had assessed the problem and managed to coax the kitten out of the tree and back into Jamie's arms. An image of Jorad digging his blade into the man tore through her memory. Thon had been choking Jorad. Soray had believed that Jorad was going to die. She had felt so helpless as she watched the fight unfold and had found herself wishing that she had had Zarda's training. Surely, if Zarda had been there instead of Soray, she would have been able to do something to help the situation. He is pale, Zarda said. I need water. Soray, can you fetch some? The words passed through Soray's mind, but they failed to register. She felt somebody shaking her and looked up into Zarda's anxious face. We're going to lose him if we don't hurry. Quick, water. If you see Karn, tell him to run. That man never seems to understand urgency. Go. Soray found herself stumbling to her feet. With her first couple of steps, she almost tripped and grabbed onto a stranger for support. For the first time since entering the arches, she looked around and was surprised to see how many people there were. They had been more successful at gathering people from Zekerani than she had thought. With a mumbled apology to the man she latched onto to keep from falling, she hurried forward into the hallway, this time more aware of the weary townspeople who had rested against either side of the walls that had brick archways like the one they'd used to access Zekerani. When they had moved through them earlier, Soray had imagined all the different spots that they could have gone. So many doors, so many options. The excitement of traveling was now the furthest thing from her mind. She reached the end of the hallway and found Wes and Liron standing at the intersection, chatting with several young women. so Ray moved closer as she snorted. There was rarely anything else on the minds of those two other than women. Just as she got to the group, she remembered she had been crying and rubbed her face, hoping it was not obvious. She touched Wes on the shoulder. Not even a full adult yet, and the kid had already picked up too many bad habits. "Wes, I need water. Gerard has been hurt. Bad." Alarm covered the gawky youth's face. "I have a skin of water. I remember seeing a spring of water back by the..." He faltered, struggling for the words. "At the world." Saray knew what he meant, but had not noticed that there had been a source of water there. She had been so focused on the translucent globe that Adar had insisted was a map of the world. "Give me what you have and go fetch more." She thought of all the blood. "We're going to need a lot of it. Liron, go with him." For once, Liron's face was not split into a mischievous grin. He had moved while they'd been talking and had fetched a canteen from his bag. "Take mine too," Liron said. "Come on, Wes, hurry." Without waiting for a response, Liron broke into a run, headed back towards the hallway with the globe. Saray would not have been more surprised if Liron had sprouted wings and jumped into the air. That one always made her skin feel like it was crawling with worms. The most serious conversation could be going on around him, and all he could think about was smiling at the nearest pretty girl. She took the water skin from Wes before he chased after Liron, shaking her head as she watched them run. Neither of them had thought to grab something with which to carry water, but they both had disappeared before she thought of it herself. Hopefully, they didn't get too far before they realized they needed something for the water. Karn was already there when Saray returned to Zarda. Despite Zarda's words that Karn couldn't notice urgency, his face was pale, and he was covered in sweat as he peered down at Jorad. Several of Karn's shirts lay beside Zarda. He held another that had been ripped into shreds. Jorad's face was pale. The bruises were more fully formed than the last time Saray had looked at him, and his eyes were closed. He looked as though he had passed out. Blood was smeared all over his chest, and the makeshift bandage she had tied to his shoulder earlier had come off. The wound that her father had inflicted was now open to the air. She shook her head as she took him in, uncertain what she felt. Her insides were a mixture of fear, anger, and betrayal. Yet, as she stared, she could not help but remember how she had felt before everything had happened. She had been coy with him at first, knowing that he was the sort that was here today, gone tomorrow. But the more she had gotten to know him, she couldn't help but lower her defenses to let him in. In the end, she had decided to see where things went, and if it went bad, the fact that he would probably leave Neberon shortly afterward had seemed to be a benefit. Melia only knew how much she wished that Arrow had left her alone once they'd broken up. Things would have been so different if that fool had just left her well enough alone. Her father would have been with her right now. She gripped the water skin with one hand, and the top of the copper canteen bit into the palm of her other hand. If Arrow hadn't brought those trumped-up accusations against Jorad, none of this would have happened. She saw someone scowling in her direction from the corner of her eye. When she turned, she was surprised to see that it was Ter. His eyes were bloodshot, his face grimy, and he was covered with sweat. A shard of glass hung from his coat, and a bunch of smaller flecks of glass had stuck to the skin of his neck. His lips were pulled back in a silent snarl as he took in Jorad. The malevolent stare had not been for her after all. She wondered if Ter had done something to Adar. Those two had been at each other's throats from the first day, and Adar's absence was conspicuous. She turned to Karn, thinking to ask him what had happened, but he and Zarda were still hunched over Jorad, heads close together as they spoke in hushed whispers. It was for the better anyway that Saray did not speak. Karn probably would have just sneered at her instead of answering the question. Ter growled under his breath and muttered something, but Saray was unable to make out what he had said. With a final glance at Jorad, he pushed his way through the people clogging the hallway. Strangely, he kept his hand in his pocket, as if he was clinging to something while he moved. Saray could not summon the energy to wonder what it could be. The man had never been one to speak much unless he was angry. At night, when the others had been settling down, he and Tarnor had kept to themselves. If Ter had done something to Adar, Saray doubted that Karn would have returned with him. She put the thought from her mind. "Where's the water? How long have you been standing there gawking?" Saray turned to a red-faced Zarda. Feeling more than a little foolish, she thrust the canteen and waterskin forward without any words. She opened her mouth to make an apology but bit it off before she started. Jorad stirred but did not open his eyes. Sweat ran down his brown hair through the blood on his face. Zarda snatched them both from her hands. "We will need more than that." Saray caught another glimpse of Jorad's shoulder as Zarda turned her attention back to him. She tried to wake Jorad with several gentle touches to the face, but when that did not work, she unceremoniously splashed water from the canteen on Jorad's face. "Worry about the wounds first," Karn said. "His pulse is strong, and he is breathing." "It's shallow," Zarda snapped. "I've seen people die of less." She looked at Saray. "More water!" Saray stared at Jorad, unable to move despite Zarda's tone of voice. How could he have killed Garou and Thon? A distant part of her recognized that Garou had attacked first, and that Jorad had acted on instinct. Thon had been a different story, though. Jorad could have tried something else to keep the man from beating him. "I might have been able to convince Thon to come off him," she thought, "if I'd have been quicker to think through things." Unfortunately, she had been so shocked at Garou's sudden death that she had been able to do little else other than watch. "I need more water." Zarda grabbed Saray by the arm and pushed her back. "He will die without it. See what you can do about getting a fire going and bring some to boil. Don't go starting a fire in here. Open a different arch. Go now." As Saray stumbled away, too afraid to explain to Zarda that more water was already on the way, she wished again that Zarda had been there when Thon had been straddled on top of Jorad. Zarda would have known what to do. Saray snorted. "I must not have more than a wit or two left." She knew what Zarda would have done. She would have run Thon through with her sword and not given it a second thought. She closed her eyes when she thought of Jorad's bloody shirt on the floor and tightened her hands into fists. When her father had stabbed Jorad, she had felt helpless and torn. What would Zarda have done in that situation, knowing all that Saray knew? Saray still couldn't come up with an answer that she liked as she approached the closest arch. A young man with a baby had taken up residence in front of it. The child was asleep, whimpering softly. It was probably hungry and tired. She bent down, intending to wake up the sleeping kid to get him to move when she stopped herself. A young couple sat before the next arch over, and they were both awake. It would not be any bother if Saray asked them to move instead. Shaking her head ruefully, Saray glanced back at Zarda, who was bent over Jorad again and working to bandage him up. "I need her training." Saray asked the couple to move. They did not respond at first, and she had to repeat her question several times before it sunk in. By that time, the kid with the baby was awake again, and the infant had begun to fuss. As the couple moved out of the way, she noticed that the woman had her hand wrapped in a bloody shirt, and that the man made sure to keep her wounded hand elevated as they stood. Saray stared numbly. At any other time, she might have felt guilty, but she had far greater concerns on her mind. Once they had gone, she reached up and touched the top of the arch with her thumb in the same way that she had seen the others do. Nothing happened. She tried it again with the same result. After the third try, she looked around, hoping Zarda wasn't about to rip into her again. "Can't get the arch open?" Liron asked. He held a bucket of water. Wes was right behind him with a full bucket as well. Saray was unable to read Liron's tone, and she couldn't tell if he was making fun of her or not. Without responding, she went ahead and touched it one last time, wondering if she was doing something wrong. When the bricks between the arch did not disappear, Liron stepped up and elbowed her out of the way. "It's easy, just like this." He swiped his thumb across the top, and the arch disappeared, revealing a grassy meadow that was lit with sunshine. Suppressing her annoyance that she could not tell if Liron was trying to be helpful or if he was just toying with her, she stepped through. She had touched it in the exact same way as he. Why had it worked for him, but not for her? "Come on," she said. "We need to get that water boiling."
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.